Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Bruce DeTorres. Bruce DeTorres. On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is World Stage, exploring our power and exposing the tyrannies. And with me this hour is Professor Edward Ted Steele. And he is a molecular and cellular immunologist, geneticist, microbiologist, and the author of 6 books and over 100 scientific research papers. He conducted research and taught at the Australian National University's John Curtin School of Medical Research and worked at the University of Toronto's Ontario Cancer Institute, the Wellcome Trust in the UK, and the University of Wollongong. Professor Steele is a C.Y. O'Connor Foundation Life Fellow, currently lives and works in Melbourne, and consulting in cancer research and other areas of biomedical biotech R&D. Since 2015, Professor Steele has been publishing on cosmic biology data, combining his biomedical genetic experience with the acknowledged founder of the new scientific discipline of astrobiology, Professor Chandra Wickram Asinghe. And we are going to discuss an alternative analysis and the evidence thereof for the origin of COVID-19. Ted, it's an honor to have you here. How are you today?
Good morning on my end, Bruce. Thank you very much for having me. I'm fine.
I'm glad and I'm honored. And I've really enjoyed studying you this week, Ted. And like we planned, because we did some emails back and forth, I think everyone really needs to sit back and relax and take a deep breath, because what you're going to share with them, Ted, I really don't think they've encountered anywhere else, unless they're TNT listeners and they've enjoyed you on other shows. But anyone who's, you know, discovering you for the first time has a real treat in store, has a real chance to open their minds, a real chance at that humbling and very rejuvenating experience that reminds us what it's like to be a child in awe of a vast field of possibility that never occurred to us before, because that's my take and evaluation of your incredible research into the origin of COVID-19. So I've put all that on the table so you, Ted, could comfortably pick, where do you begin?
Well, let's begin with what you put to be. What is COVID-19? Mm-hmm. And we've just got to get it clear. And I'm going to talk about the origin and global spread of COVID-19. And I'm going to sort of act in the teaching mode, as you've suggested, because there's so much evidence supporting my position. People can go to our website, independent.academia.edu/EdwardJSteele, to get all our papers and books. But COVID-19 itself is a virus. That's true. You know, it's not made up, but it's a common cold virus, and it is a genuine suddenly emergent pandemic. That is also true, and it arrived suddenly towards the end of 2019 and was evident first on a scale in China, but we also spot incidences on the 40 degree north line, both in China, Europe, and in North America. Just slightly before the major explosion in January 2020 in China, and then on the 40 degree north line as well. But it is genuinely a common cold virus that affects or is lethal for, as we know, most people know this now, about 0.1% of the exposed population, and they turn out to be the elderly comorbid group. The average age is about 84 years in Australia, but it's that average age is panning out all over the globe. And when I say 0.1% exposed, that's, you know, using the PCR positive parameter as being exposed. And the PCR has all its own problems, but the data on the epidemiology I'm going to discuss comes from the PCR, you know, monitoring method and the global epidemiology of deaths. So that's how I can arrive at that number. Now, I'm not alone in believing that. Even people like Anthony Fauci now believes it really is the common cold, and we should have used totally different ways of dealing with this rather than vaccination. I'll come to him at the end. But that's what we're dealing with. Now, how did it arrive? There are two, you know, you're right. I'm going to talk about a completely different, diametrically opposed explanation to the two that are in vogue. The first one, of course, the animal jump, that it came from an animal infected with COVID-19, and it was transferred to humans by, say, Chinese wet markets. That was the bat soup theory of COVID origin. And then there's the other one, that as that one lost favor because it was impossible, you know, it was human. It was unnatural. It was man-made. It was made in a Wuhan virology lab, and it's a lab. So, you know, the lab theory evolved out of that. The second lab leak has had a powerful grip on the human mind, particularly the American mind. I'm not necessarily saying that in a disparaging way, but it's become so toxic, as you know, in the United States. The lab leak has excluded all other explanations now. And thus, it's very difficult for alternative explanations to emerge. But let me just deal with the animal first. The odds of any animal reservoir producing, you know, having, you know, a jumping to the humans, that is a COVID-19 starter, a precursor jumping to humans, a 10 to the 684. We've done the statistics, and on that, it's an impossible odds. You know, the closest animal COVID-19 related virus that exists out, and there's a large number of them, is 96.2% similar to COVID-19. But that might say, well, that's incredibly similar. You know, like this is derived, of course, from SARS-1 of about 20 years ago. But 96.2 actually translates to 1,100 nucleotide or genetic letter differences between, you know, the virus that emerged in China and its precursor, its closest precursor. Now, 1,100, so, well, you know, that's a lot. Yes, it is a lot. And all of the experts, by the way, all of the molecular virology evolutionary experts around the world agree it had to be a completely new virus, you know, and the odds of it coming from animals. They want it to come from an animal, by the way. Most of the experts don't believe in lab leak, like Fauci and the others, because, you know, Fauci doesn't believe in lab leak. I happen to agree with that, but they want it to come from an animal, but it's impossible, right? Now, even if we're generous and we go to 99%, something similar, 99% from a precursor virus for a jump, that comes down, that actually boils down to 300 differences, all at the exact spot along this 30,000 nucleotide or genetic letter, you know, a COVID-19 genome, all in the right spot or on the right type. And so, and that 99%, that gives you odds of 10 to the 184 of getting a successful jump. Now, why am I throwing these massive astronomical numbers at you? Because let me just give you another astronomical number. The numbers of basic atoms, that is hydrogen atoms, in the known Big Bang universe, which extends out to at least, say, 10 to the 14 billion light years, the number of those atoms, that's just the hydrogen atoms, which dominate the universe, by the way, they are the major molecular component of the universe, is 10 to the 84. See, now the difference between 10 to the 84 and 10 to the 184, for the, you know, for being generous number, the generous number, is 10 to the 100. You know, it's impossible. It outweighs all the statistical and molecular resources of the known universe. So it didn't happen from an animal. All the existing, you know, precursors could not have provided the leap. And by the way, all of the molecular virologists agree with that, but they still cling to a zoonosis explanation that it came from an animal, right? So, because, you know, we're talking about different people now with their ideas. Now, the Wuhan lab leak, there are two things. I want to dispose of it straight away now because, first of all, it doesn't explain what happened in China on massive scale through January. China ignited on scale. That is, all regions of China ignited with COVID-19 at the same time. You say, well, you know, why is that important? Well, that's important because simple person-to-person spread, you'd expect some sort of, pattern emerging through, a locus. And then, and in a way, it sort of looks like that because Wuhan was the center. But Wuhan, that is the center of China, is the center. That's where all the manufacturing industry for the communist Chinese economy is, which makes all the widgets to the rest of the world. We sell to the rest of the world. And that was heavily, I'm certain now, I don't want to go into my other reasons for that, that was heavily swabbed. All the other regions of China were also erupting at the same time, but that was heavily swabbed. So that's probably a bias, focal point, given the large population in China, 1.4 billion. But anyway, that's the first problem. I don't want to go into all the reasons why, Wuhan escaped from the labs, could get it all ignited at the same time, because that leads into science fiction stories, by the way. And I'm not a science fiction writer. But look, I just want to make a qualification from your earlier guest, Jane. I'm not antithetical to religion or deep or spiritual, trying to understand the universe in a deeper spiritual world, as all our, our most recent papers say that. But let me just get back to this. So we're left with the explanation we're going to provide. That is, the COVID-19 virus that appeared first in China and then was spread all around the world came, first of all, from a carbonaceous meteorite strike over northeast China on the night of October 11th, 2019. Now, when you make that claim, think, my God, what's he saying? Well, you see, to us, with all the data dating back many, many years, that's totally consistent with the universe teeming with life. As Professor Chandrawekh Ramasanghi, Fred Hoyle, and all their collaborators had already provided that evidence. The universe is teeming with life. The trouble is NASA have kept that under wraps, have been smearing Hoyle and Ramasanghi and any others that were, agreeing with them and not letting the people know that there is an alternative explanation for life in the universe. And it certainly didn't start on Earth. Didn't emit, emerge, just happened to be as the Judeo-Christian, beliefs would have us. And then obviously slow Darwinian evolution. It didn't happen that way. We were seeded with light from the universe. Now, there's a lot of evidence I can go through on to support that claim, but maybe let me jump to now the point. It landed, it came to a carbonaceous meteorite strike over northeast China on the night of October 11. Now, carbonaceous meteorites are fragments of cometary incubators. Comets are these massive bodies, up to 10 kilometres in diameter, that, orbit our solar system, both the outer solar system and some come into the inner solar system, like Halley's Comet. And when they go around the sun and start fragmenting, because they're like a pressure cooker bomb going off, because they're filled with water, you see, most of these comets are filled with watery interiors, and that they are massive cosmic ecosystems for living systems, you see. Now, we know that from the signature of their ejecta trails. They have the signature of life. I don't want to go into that from the spectral signature, but that's the same signature we see in the interstellar dust between our planet, between our solar system and the center of the Milky Way. And it's the same signature we see elsewhere in beyond our universe. Actually, in other galaxies, signatures. So let me just jump to that now. Back to it, of that strike. Now, I'm saying this because you see, all pandemics in history have arrived this way. And our best example is the Spanish flu, which is a different virus, a bit more lethal than the common cold, that was the Spanish flu in 1918-1919. Now, we know that was our best documented pandemic before the modern era, in all sorts of ways, actually. It is, and Fred Hoyle and Chandrawekh Ramasanghi described that in great detail in their 1979 book, Diseases from Space. Now, back in 1919, viruses were just being discovered. They were the filterable agents. Our knowledge about DNA, RNA, and protein, and genetic manipulation, and recombinant DNA, and all the, and everything that the biotechnology industry is built on, and the bioweapons industry, by the way, is built on, mm-hmm. none of that existed back then. But back in 1918, it came suddenly, and then it was striking the globe at different parts of the globe, like India and the USA on the same day. Get your head around that.
Ted, speaking of things that have come suddenly, we're going to take a little break right now, and we're going to come right back. My guest is Professor Ted Steele, here on World Stage, here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
Why is it happening? What's going to happen? What's the reaction going to be? Go ahead. The floor is yours.
I mean, this is a very, very disturbing thing to think that the government can use their power to weaponize the government and take hostage, in this case, a former president of the United States. I mean, this is just so unbelievably wrong and dangerous. Who do these people think they are? This is why we have a constitutional setup of government. And this is wrong beyond measure. I mean, I listen to MSNBC on occasion. Do I want these people arrested and thrown in jail? No. Do I disagree with President Biden? Yes. Do I want him thrown in jail for saying something I don't agree with? No. Do I think President Obama, former President Obama, should be rounded up and thrown in federal prison? No, of course not. This is very dangerous stuff. This is the stuff of banana republics.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay! Alrighty.
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
The digital ID will be the collar around our necks. Their power is only what we allow them to have. Don't comply at all costs. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
This is World Stage with Bruce DeTauris, and my guest is Professor Edward Steele, and he is describing the evidence and the conclusion that COVID-19 arrived on a carbonaceous meteorite in October 2019, and Ted's work can be found at independent.academia.edu/EdwardJSteele, STEELE. Ted, you were, I believe, just describing that meteorite strike, no?
Yeah, well, I was going to get back to that in a second. I just want to finish off the Spanish flu, 1918-1919. I was talking about strange things like strikes on the same day. And in 1918-1919 with the Spanish flu, the influenza virus, and possibly something else. We now think there was probably something. That's another story. I don't want to complicate things. Those strikes occurred on the same day, different parts of the globe. There was no jet travel back then. There was no communication or movement of people. And furthermore, it was striking ships at sea, multiple ships at sea. It was striking isolated islands and isolated regions, like the whole state of Alaska in winter. And all of that evidence is documented by Fred and Chandra in their book, Diseases from Space, 1979. Now, I just want to say that for me as a scientist, and knowing how many pandemics in history have emerged, particularly that one and a few others, like the bubonic plague had many of the same features. There was less detailed evidence than the Spanish flu, but enough to indicate it had to come from the air as well. It certainly didn't come from fleas or rats. But the point is this, that all of this lab leak stuff and human man-made stuff that many other scientists are trying to push is just They're just, you know, they're interesting facts, some of the things they use to support their facts, like these features in viruses, but you'll find gain of function and interesting sequence features in all viruses. All the naturally occurring viruses have them. It's part of their natural evolution. The point is, it's all red herrings, but I want to dispose of it now. As a scientist, when I'm confronted with new observations and, you know, and data, I have to make decisions on what to believe and what not to believe. Because in any interesting observation or phenomena or experiment in science, you have first of all the universe of total facts, and then you have the universe of relevant facts, right? That might be useful in understanding that. And amongst the relevant facts, there are probably fabricated facts and artifacts, that is, just dodgy data that even the experimenter didn't even realize was there. And then you have interesting but irrelevant facts that don't actually solve the problem. Now, everything to do with lab is in that category. They're interesting but irrelevant facts. And so they go straight into the red herrings basket. That offends people who would try to argue this with me. But that's what you have to do if you're a scientist. You've got to be brutal with the facts and what's not relevant. Now, so I'm going to leave lab leak behind now and go back to that meteorite strike. One of the things that I find very difficult to understand is, okay, if there was this huge fireball over Yilan in northeast China on the 40-degree north line, why weren't these living entities, you know, the virus particle, why weren't they consumed in the fireball? See, it doesn't work like that. These meteorites, these large fragments, these bolides, which Chandra, the astronomer, estimates was probably about 10 meters in diameter or a little bit more. When they come in, they're coming in into the, you know, above the, through the ionosphere and then the mesosphere into the stratosphere. And these objects in the universe, if all objects like this are traveling at vast speeds, cosmic speeds. In the case of these meteorites coming in, whether they're big or small, they're coming in at about 70-odd thousand kilometres per hour. I'll speak in kilometres. We actually went decimal years ago. But anyway, still similar magnitudes. They come in at 70 kilometres, you know, an hour, which is translates to 20 kilometres a second, okay? Now, as these large, you know, carbonaceous meteorites, as the name implies, they're full of carbon, you know, carbon-rich material, living material. As they're coming in, they're fragmenting, they're liberating dust. So as the density of the atmosphere gets more and more dense and then they hit the stratosphere and then they get into the stratosphere, the granite rocks and iron rocks that are in the internal parts of this, you know, carbonaceous mineral, they explode, and that's the bomb that goes off. And that was a big one, by the way, on the night of October 11, 2019. Over Jilin in northeast China. It was on the 40-degree north line. You've got to hold that in your head because I'm going to talk about the spread in a second. But you see, before that explosion, most of the carbonaceous meteorite had liberated meteorite dust in a massive trail. So it's a soft landing. Now, there could have been some loss of particles, you know, due to heat loss and other things and not being, you know, adequately protected. As that dust was, you know, floating in and then settling down. But you've got to understand that this is another thing you have to understand about the universe. Everything about the universe outside the Earth are on a cosmic scale, both time and space. Particles, for example, in the viral particles in that bolide would have been on trillions of particles. And let's suppose, you know, multiple trillions of particles. And let's just suppose there were 10. I'll just give an example so you can see what I'm getting at here. Suppose there were 10 to the 22 virion particles in that bolide that struck, right? That was the total number. And we lose 99% through to heating, you know, flash heating. We're still left with 10 to the 20. You see, we're still left with an astronomically large number. And that's the key point with all soft landings are like that throughout history. And that's the way we can understand why the universe is teeming with life, how life gets transmitted across the universe through these sorts of processes. And time is also a massive number. That cometary bolide, that carbonaceous meteorite, came from a comet. And that comet was probably had probably been in existence for maybe 5 to 10 billion years. So this would have been a small contact with a congenial habitat, that is, the ability to grow in the respiratory tract of human beings and animals, ever. And that also stuns people. So this virus was ready to go. And that was the other argument that's used against, you know, against what we're saying. But that's exactly how they all are. They all look like they're ready to go. And that then feeds into the fact the universe literally is teeming with life. There's a common genetic code and a common DNA, RNA paradigm that literally, you know, handles life in the universe. But I've got to get that out of the way first. So we're dealing with a central concept that the universe is teeming with life. Fred Hoyle and Chandrawick Ramasanghi did with all their analysis, their books, their papers, and then all their collaborators helping them were embedding that that concept before I joined Fred in 2015. After many years as a molecular immunologist and evolutionist, I then became an astrobiologist. But so I read all their key books, I read all their key papers, and by the time COVID struck, I was thoroughly lucid with, you know, the fact that the universe is teeming with life and all the evidence and all the counter arguments against it, and NASA's role in the massive suppression. So I knew what was going on. Anyway, let's get back to the meteorite. So that meteorite dust is like they're viral laden rich dust clouds, right? They're drifting down and lifted down, and by the angle of the strike. And then and what we see in China and generally suggests that all of China and parts of probably Korea, South Korea got contaminated, but particularly China. Now, I want to make one point now, because this now is relevant. The SARS-1 and the SARS-2 strikes, because they're 20 years apart, they came in at the roughly the same time, October, November each year, through the Orionid meteorite stream, which strikes the Earth at that time each year. Okay, that's the formal name for it. And it strikes Siberia and China first. That's where it strikes first. So that's why, with a very large population in China, of plants and animals and human beings, why we get strange pandemic phenomena seem to be igniting in China first. Okay, that's really important to get your head around. So I don't want to go into the political implications of that, but that's very important. See, it's not the eating habits, the dirty eating habits of the Chinese. It is a phenomenon. It's a natural phenomenon. Now, that meteorite dust drifts down, and it literally contaminates the environment, the physical environment. It's not person-to-person spread initially. It's on everything, the grass, domestic animals, roadways, doorways, handles. Every object exposed to the atmosphere that would have been contaminated when this was brought down, machinery, cars, they become contaminated. And human beings rub up against that environment and pick up the dust, and some of it can be transferred, put their finger in their nose, and some might catch a mild cold. But if it gets into the elderly, you know, immune defenseless group, the elderly group, which many Chinese families in these large cities, you know, live with their parents and their grandparents, and this is a bomb ready to go off, because inevitably that'll be bought in. And now that brings me to the next point about the virus. When it gets into the geriatric centres, aged care centres, or, you know, three generational families, and these susceptible people replicate the virus on scale, they also produce trillions of particles as an aerosol in the environment. So that environment where those infected people are that are suffering, you know, with a real respiratory crisis, and for that you need therapy. You don't need vaccines. And that's, you know, I'm going through the list of massive mistakes we've made now. Now the point is that there are trillions of particles and the virus gets contaminated, because that leads to the next phase of the pandemic. Because after the meteorite dust is ignited, and we think it not only ignited the big epidemics in China in January, but it was also responsible, because it was on the 40-degree north line, it was also responsible for the early explosions that occurred on the 40-degree north line around the world. And in order they were Iran, Tehran, Qom, Lombardy in Italy, Spain, and then New York City. That was the sequence. A little bit of a strike in South Korea, but that was also on the 40-degree north line. Now, that's very important to keep. See, that's consistent with the first initiating event, because all the initial explosions were occurring on the 40-degree north line. People forget that. If you go to the Johns Hopkins site that were keeping all the records on all this, that's where that clearly was. Either side of that line, they were null zones. There were nothing going off. It eventually diffused, so, you know, north and south of the 40-degree, you know, north latitude band. But initially it was on that band. And that's really important to keep in your head. So the dust came down and ignited, and that created a plume. But meanwhile, in the stratospheric jet streams, it was being distributed, you know, to the rest of the world. So there were two ways, you know, the virus got spread to the world. It got spread initially starting on the 40-degree north line after, you know, to the rest of the world that way. But in China, it produced a massive viral plume of human passage virions that then got blown across the Pacific to take out various ships. Remember in that early month or two, the Diamond Princess was in the Sea of Japan, the Westerdam in the South China Sea, the Grand Princess cruise ship between Hawaii and
I remember Santa. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember also big aircraft carriers, the USS Roosevelt. They were all being struck about that time, and that was they were those viral clouds coming from the China human passage plume getting caught up in the winds. Okay, we've got to get that very clear. Now we got genomic evidence from the Grand Princess, which clearly showed it had to come, that had to come from China, not the actual China, not outside China, because the signature of the changes that occurred outside China are different. I don't want to go into the genetics we published.
Sure.
That'll just confuse people. But it's the movement through the meteorite dust coming down. And then after that, that job was done, and that probably petered out sometime April, May, I think, in 2020. The major driver after that were these plumes of human passage, first from China and then in other countries like the UK. We had the Alpha variant. Remember that one? And that was. And that was affecting the United States. And then we had the South African variant, Beta, remember that one? And then there was the Gamma in Brazil. And then later in India, we had later in the year, 2020, we had the Delta and Kappa variants in India, right? And that's another characteristic that they tend to get a foothold in different, you know, population groups, and that becomes the dominant clone that gets plumed into the aerosol. Okay, so you're getting a feel now for these numbers. Now, when we talk about plumes, we're talking about trillions and trillions of virus particles. Okay, large numbers. So that's how. So I'm going to stop in a second because I want you to digest and let you ask a question. But that's how it got distributed initially. It came in through the strike, the liberation of the meteorite dust, the strike on China initially, and then it was distributed around the world for other strikes, and then there was further movement around the globe through the human passage plumes. So that's how the virus got distributed to the world, and it's turned out to be a common cold virus. Okay, that's really, we've got to get that really clear in our head. We don't, we didn't ever needed a vaccine for it, because in history, all common colds never felt we deserved to produce a vaccine to protect ourselves from the common cold, which tends to be seasonal anyway. So, look, I'll leave it there, Bruce. You probably have a question you want, because I wanted to get that early spreading, arrival and spreading process and knock on the head animal jumps and lab leak. So we're setting the stage now for what the implications are of this.
Indeed. And for listeners, you mentioned a book, Diseases from Space. Is that the title?
That's the title. It was published in 1979 by Sir Fred Hoyle and Professor N. Chandra Wickramasinghe in the UK. J.M. Dent and Sons were the first publishers, but the book's available, it's still available on Amazon. But in 2020... Yeah, that's a very important book to read. You've actually got to read that. You've got to actually take time out now from Syria. You know, a few weeks out, and actually read it.
Indeed. Plus your papers on independent.academia.edu/EdwardJSteele, STEELE, for context, because on first hearing, this is my experience over the last week or so studying your work, Ted. Mm-hmm. It's the corroboration and the context to know that everything you're saying is happening inside a decades-long body of knowledge. And that really helps persuade me, who's hearing a completely alternate, brand new model of reality, and yet I can assimilate it because, there's a foundation of context, et cetera. Yes. And I've got a number of questions. I'll say them now, and then we're going to run to a little break. The claims of patented sequences in the virus, you said gain of function is something that kind of occurs naturally. We'll talk about that on the other side. Not most important, but other things like the coincidence of planning events to handle a new pandemic. We're going to jump to a little break right now. This is a fascinating conversation with Professor Edward Ted Steele here on TNT Radio.
President Biden warns we're all damned unless we follow his green policies.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
President Joe Biden gave his climate views, appropriately enough, on the Comedy Channel. Here is a portion of the interview.
If we don't keep the temperature from going above 1.5 degrees Celsius raised, then we're in real trouble. That whole generation is damned. I mean, that's not hyperbole.
First off, that is hyperbole. Second off, no one is damned. The only way we are damned is if we follow the climate agenda and shut down modern society to do absolutely nothing for the climate. Second, the temperature goal of 1.5 C or 2 degrees C were revealed in the ClimateGate emails to be, quote, pulled out of thin air and with no scientific basis. It was called clearly a, quote, political goal. Dr. Roger Pilkey Jr. said it's more grounded in political aspirations than science, and there's essentially no science behind these temperature goals. Yet, we will face the wrath of Mother Nature if we don't follow. Let's end medieval superstition and return to science. Reject the net zero climate agenda. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
One disease. Millions of lives permanently disrupted. But Alzheimer's disease is taking more than memories. It's taking lives. What few realize is that Alzheimer's kills more people than breast cancer and prostate cancer combined. Everyone is at risk, even you. And everyone can help, especially you. We're the Alzheimer's Association, the brains behind saving yours. Join us.
Visit the Alzheimer's Association online at alz.org to find out more. A message brought to you by TNT Radio.
This is World Stage with Bruce DeTorres on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
With me is Ted Steele, and we are talking about the phenomenal evidence that COVID-19 arrived on the planet in a meteorite strike over China in October 2019. Ted, where would you take us next, or what would you make of those quick questions I threw at you before the
break? I think that I'm glad you asked those two questions, because they're the sort of things that drive a lot of the Wuhan lab leak and all the other stuff and all the other things to do with it. So let's just deal with them in turn. Patented sequences. Yeah, it comes up all the time, and it's usually coming up from people who have never been in molecular biology or virology or even associated with the biotechnology industry. And I have been associated with all of them. And what they do, look, patented sequences are notorious. Okay, that's the first point. Every single imaginable thing, whether it's bacterial or viral, they the gene jockeys and the people manipulating these things in the lab, are taking bits and pieces of them and patenting them, and it's part of the game. They shouldn't be doing it because, you can't really patent a genetic sequence, but if you couch it the right way, you can. So patented sequences have been part and parcel of genetic engineering and biotechnology for about 30 years. It's the way the pharmaceutical industry builds up its protection for all its medicines. Okay, that's the first point.
As a layperson, your answer just taught me that by asking about, what about patented sequences? I think that means I was unconsciously asking, but Ted, if it's patented, does that mean it was artificially assembled? And I think you're saying, no, that does.
No, that's right. Okay, look, you see how all of these red herrings evaporate when you start dealing with the facts? Now, planning for it. Look, they've known about the sudden emergence of pandemics. All infectious diseases have known. They're freaked out by the bubonic plague, Spanish flu, all of the strikes of the influenza viruses since the Second World War, you know, Hong Kong flu, Asian flu, you know, so they're all coming from China, by the way. But then we got SARS too, SARS-1, and that came from China too. ingrained in pandemic infectious diseases is this idea they really are coming suddenly and we can never predict. But because so many have happened throughout history, there's going to be another one. So let's try and get ready for it. And the usual thing is like fighting the previous war. Let's sort of try and take some of the sequences that we know in the case of coronavirus. Right. And by the way, they couldn't have got onto the Chinese. By the way, provided us with all the analytics and with assistance from the CDC and Australian scientists in the critical month of December 2019. All of that, all of those critical things that we now have built up our knowledge, our molecular biology knowledge of SARS-2, that is COVID-19, were developed by the Chinese, and they developed.
So Ted,
go on. Sorry, Ian.
No, they developed it. Finish your thought. Sorry.
Yeah, well, it's just that the starting point from it, because of the similarity between SARS-1 and SARS-2, many analytics were already there, and then because they had many common regions, so SARS-1 and SARS-2 are very 96% similar. You'd expect a lot of common regions, and there are. So, but the point is they were planning for it all right through all their knowledge of how to supposedly make vaccines, and they really stuffed it up big time with mRNA, which is highly, highly dangerous. But that's another. I don't want to get into that at the moment. The point is, I can actually tell you why it's dangerous. Actually, not our gut feeling that we think it's dangerous, but why it's dangerous.
Well, the biggest question, and you can make that point, or you could deal with this question now or later, is given what you just said, that by December the parameters were pretty much well known by the scientific or medical or worldwide health organizations based on the data from China, doesn't that prove that all the harm done by, I'm going to say, the diabolical response over the last 3 years has been this intentional harming, sickening, and murder of people?
The dollar signs are trillions of dollars going to be made out of a vaccine. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, now that's a bigger strike on the planet than the meteorite.
Of course, because the pandemic we've got now is the pandemic of the vaccine injured. It's not the virus anymore.
You are a voice crying in the wilderness. Here's my last question before I let you take this wherever you want, Ted. Besides you and your papers and your interviews, who's teaching this?
We're the only ones. We're the only group that have monitored this thing from the historical and the deep science perspective right through, and then almost weekly basis. We published over 20 papers through the critical 2 years of the first 2 years and a few others since. It's all out in that book, understanding all of our papers. The critical papers are all in understanding the origin and global spread of 19. You can buy that at Amazon.com or get it directly from World Scientific Publishing in Singapore. So we're the only one.
I looked for that book on Amazon, and the price tag is $97.
I know they're all because it's they cost a lot to make these books, but libraries can get them, and they could be a repository for people to go and read them.
Let's get that title. Wait, while people are listening right now, that the title of that book is "Understanding the Origin and Global Spread of COVID-19."
Edited by Chandrawick Ramasanghi, Professor Reg Gozinski, and myself.
All right.
It's all our papers. All curated there.
And you're calling yourself part of a group that's teaching this.
Yes.
Where online can people find the group and what you've published?
Well, you can find all of our papers at that first website, mine, but Professor Chandrawick Ramasinghe has his own websites, and he has a long history of that. So they're the two main ones.
That site at the top again for you was independent.academia.edu/Edward J. Steele, STEELE.
Yeah, all our publication URLs, you can go directly to them. You don't even have to buy the book. You can get them, everything, at our site. And all of our interviews that I've given and Chandra's given, all the critical ones over the last two or three years,
right,
you'll find all the URL the key interviews as well. Yes.
Where do we go from here, Ted? Where do we go from here?
Well, it was been you can imagine for me what it's been like watching this, and Chandra, because the truth has to be worth something. Actually, we've got to know the truth about the origins of COVID-19, and watching the world and particularly the United States tear itself apart over this is amazing. I'm going to have to talk about, I don't know where it's going to go from here, but I do know the truth may not necessarily set us free, but it might help us, mightn't it, understand more logical temporal, sequences of events. And so,
yes.
So I'm hoping that will be one of the things that come out of it, because you see, we can't do a Bill Gates. All his stuff is nonsense. Look, that guy's full of absolute nonsense. Honestly, I could use stronger words. This is, if he wants to throw his billions of dollars around, this is where he should throw it. We should be having a near-Earth monitoring surveillance system to sample the meteorite dust, which is coming in every day. Okay? Do you realize that the outer surfaces of the space station is literally smothered in dust, cosmic dust? Now, it's 430 kilometers up, well out. Nothing from the Earth can possibly reach that height. But that dust, when it's examined for just common bacterial species that are known, major groups, that dust is rich in them. And it wasn't the Americans that did that experiment on the space station. It was the Russians that swabbed the outside and then analyzed the cosmic dust. You see, the divide comes down to right there on the space station. Now, those Russian papers, which we joined them co-authored later to try and spread the message that, the dust actually was, the cosmic dust on the outside of the space station was rich in bacterial species that are common on Earth, yes, and in the ocean. But you see, inside the space station, the Americans swabbed the inside but not the outside. You can see how the bubble, how these conceptual bubbles are. Even and divide right there on the space station. So what we've got to do is we've got to have a international, we've got our satellite technology now, the space station, we've got orbiting platforms, which could easily be made robotic and sample the dust. We could, everything's now automated, even sequencing us. We could have ways of analyzing that dust without any human contact on an orbiting, a satellite, a platform. We really could. Instead of sending a rover to Mars, we could be monitoring what's coming into us now. So that's one thing that we would recommend. The next thing we would recommend is this, that when we've got an idea of what it is, the trouble is we've already got an idea, because human beings, it's only when they really hit human beings, whether it's through a bird flu, like the birds get it the same way, by the way, but we think we got it from a bird, but we didn't, because the birds get struck at the same time with the influenza meteorite dust when it's coming in, because the birds fly high up and they migrate across the globe. So they're the ones that get struck first. That's what appears to appear in birds first. And of course, because bird flus seem to ignite in China on scale because of the huge population of chickens, we blame China. You see how incredible, yes, how the myths are. And we've got to get rid of these myths, and we've got to be prepared for the next one. Now, the next one is likely to be, it may not be, it may, you know, but it's likely to be a respiratory tract pandemic again, coronavirus or flu, but it may be even more deadly. It might be smallpox or it might be bubonic plague. You know, they're also very, very, very dead. They're far more serious than the common cold. We're actually very lucky, Bruce, that we got struck with a common cold as the first in the modern era, right, where all our technology allows us to monitor it. We're lucky we got hit with this. But look at the damage it's done. The common cold pandemic has wrecked economy, wrecked people's lives. It's done terrible things. All of the grifters.
It didn't do it, but the power structures. This reminds me vividly in 2004 when I was told to look into 9/11 and I discovered that the official story was a lie, that it was a self-inflicted false flag attack, and look at all the horrors that followed. This is the current version at a much bigger scale of a truth that needs to be shouted from the rooftops, and everyone needs to know this. Just to know the kind of power structures that we're up against, because that's the much, much bigger threat. And in our last few minutes, Ted, what would you emphasize? What would you recommend? What would you, you know, where would you encourage us to look, you know, what to do with this information?
Well, it's got to be part of epidemiology 101 for a start, pandemic epidemiology, and it's not. I've taken on the whole cluster of epidemiologists in Australia that were sprouting absolute nonsense through, you know, for 2 years. I've got them all. I'm like a predator drone in the sky attacking the whole group.
And they won't debate you. They won't debate you.
No one will debate me on this. No one. You know, the people like,
return your
calls. People like Dr. Andrew Huff, who pushes lab leak, or Dr. Richard Fleming, who pushes lab, or Dr. Jeremy Sash, you know, the economist. But unfortunately, the Kool-Aid's also been drunk in the United States by my heroes, Dr. Peter McCullough and Senator Rand Paul, who's spoken a lot of sense, but they haven't had the alternative laid out for them or the evidence laid out for them to actually balance up that, this lab leak doesn't add up. They won't. They won't debate me. Full stop.
Well, and also, what's your appraisal of when people pull this thread and they find out how corrupt and murderous the current institutions are? They are standing in the way, the corrupt institutions, from the revolution of reality, what you call the second Copernican revolution, to comprehend how the universe is teeming with life. What does that imply? If that were known and celebrated and worked with, how would that revolutionize our lives, science, everything?
Well, I'd like to think it would, and I would like to think that we could handle things differently and learn to live with the cosmos. Because you're dead right. Let me just repeat what I told you in email. What we've just gone through with COVID and all the evidence now we've got, which fit this model, this is the most important scientific advance in my mind since the first Copernican revolution 500 years ago. That is when Copernicus made the point, and backed by Kepler and Galileo, that the Earth was not the center of the universe. We actually rotated around the sun. That's the first Copernican revolution, okay? Mm-hmm. And that the next one, the second one, is this one, that all life on Earth was seeded from space, from a universe literally teeming with life. We are thus witnessing with COVID-19 a real-time life strike event and all the economic and social turmoil it has now brought us. I view all this, and so does Chandra Ramasanghi and all my colleagues. I'll name them now: Professor Reg Gorzynski, Professor Robin Lindley, Dr. Daryl Wallace, Professor Milton Wainwright, Dr. Herbert Rebrand, who was on those sheep transportation ships. He was a veterinary surgeon. Professor Pat Carnegie, Professor Mark Gilman, Brig Kleiss, George Howard, is an American, North Carolina, an expert on past ice ages and cosmic strikes. All of us, and a few others, there's Professor Dale Wick Ramasanghi, Chandra's brother, but all of us view it through a very different lens now. So, and it's indeed for us You know, we've published a lot of papers now in variable numbers of authors on the paper, but it is a symptom of our transition through the second Copernican revolution, that the Earth is not the center of life in the universe, but part of a much wider cosmic biology. Now, that view is congenial to Asian religion, it's not congenial to Judeo-Christian religion. Thank you.
Ted, I'm going to repeat the site here. Everyone write this down. independent.academia.edu/EdwardJSteele, STEELE, to find the papers he discussed, the evidence, the research, backing up the phenomenal interpretation of COVID-19 that is at our fingertips at that site. Ted, thank you very much. We've got dwindling seconds here. I wish you just the greatest day over there. And thank you for all the emails back and forth that it took to coordinate the time. You know, we had our time change. And I'm just so grateful. I hope we stay in touch. And we got to go. This is TNT Radio.